Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you out of breath, usually. Not out of breath, but these news headlines are making me run to my seat rather quickly. I come to you weekly to discuss self-care and integrated health. March 12th of this year, I opened the front section of the San Francisco Chronicle and found above the center fold on the front page an article with the headline, "Good Fat, Butter Too is Back. Research shows the type of oil is more important than amount." In addition, the food section had an extensive follow-on with a giant headline of "Fat is Back" and multiple articles extolling the benefits of cooking with saturated tropical oils and instructions on what ratio of different fats is health-promoting and how to choose undamaged oils and fats by understanding how they're handled. It was no surprise to me that my friends and colleagues Sally Fallon and Mary Enig were featured as experts. Today I'm joined by lipid researcher Dr. Mary Enig, her name is spelled E-N-I-G, to once again reassure you about the health benefits of a diet which includes natural undamaged fats and to dispel the unnecessary myths about dietary fats propagated by a food industry whose revenue is dependent on promoting loads of fake foods. Dr. Mary Enig, again E-N-I-G, Ph.D., is a nutritionist biochemist of international renown for her research on nutritional aspects of fats and oils. She served as a contributing editor of the scientific journal Clinical Nutrition and a consulting editor of the Journal of the American College of Nutrition. Dr. Enig has authored numerous journal publications, mainly on fats and oils research and nutrient-drug interactions, and is a well-known invited lecturer at scientific meetings and a popular interviewee on television and radio shows about nutrition. She was an early and an articulate critic of the use of trans fatty acids and advocated their inclusion in nutritional labeling. Dr. Enig received her Ph.D. in nutritional sciences from the University of Maryland, at College Park, and is a fellow of the American College of Nutrition, a member of the American Society for Nutritional Sciences, and president of the Maryland Nutritionist Association. Her book, Know Your Fats, is published by Bethesda, B-E-T-H-E-S-D-A, Press, P-R-E-S-S, and the website is BethesdaPress, one word, .com, if you want to get a hold of Know Your Fats. And we're very lucky to have her here with us today. Welcome to you.
Thank you very much for inviting me to come back to speak again.
How formal should I be? Should I call you Dr. Enig?
No.
Dr. Mary, Sir, Madam Mary? Your Highness.
Sometimes they actually call me Dr. Mary.
Dr. Mary?
I'm not sure why.
No, because, well, they do that with men sometimes, too. Dr. such and such. Okay. For those of us who haven't, those of the people who are listening who haven't heard you on previous shows here, it might be good to sort of do a rundown of some of the, you know, an overview of this. And a good way to start, I think, is to talk about this concept that, that you see when people talk about fats, where they say, oh, there are good fats and there are bad fats. And I think you and I discussed this and decided that really the only bad fats are fake fats.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And as a matter of fact, what has happened with respect to the reputation that fat has received is very unfortunate, because it has meant that people try to avoid fats, and actually because of the propaganda, they try to avoid those fats which are the best for human beings, and they end up causing problems to themselves. And because it's not really well understood by the medical profession, when people start to have problems because they're not getting the right kinds of fats, the doctors don't know what to recommend, and they just continue to recommend the wrong thing.
Well, what kinds of problems do you see?
Well, first of all, most of the food in the United States has partially hydrogenated vegetable fats, which are loaded with the trans fatty acids. And the trans fatty acids are known to cause, well, problems like type 2 diabetes. And the people are constantly being told that they should lower their fat, And if they are even allowed to have fat, then they're told that they should lower the saturated fat. And in fact, the saturated fat is the natural fat, the normal fat, the kind of fat that the body really wants, so that the trans fatty acids increase the likelihood of type 2 diabetes and some of the problems from type 2 diabetes. And the types of fats that people end up taking in, if they are taking in a fair amount, are either the trans or too much of the omega-6 fats, which
vegetable
also,
oils, yeah.
You know, the vegetable oils, which cause problems. Or they are avoiding fats and taking in a lot of carbohydrate. And it's been shown over and over in studies that people who are carbohydrate sensitive are likely to be developing type 2 diabetes. Carbohydrate sensitive means that they really can't take in large amounts of carbohydrates because they can't properly handle and process them in their bodies.
Well, and in fact, what we see is a different blood fat. We see the triglyceride levels go up,
which
are
right.
There's cholesterol and there are triglycerides, and triglycerides are more of a marker of carbohydrate intake. And we see diabetes, people start to go up to triglycerides of way over 200, 300,
right.
400, 600. One of the things that you mentioned is this sort of demonization of the natural fats, and I think that what we also talked about, which we've talked about a lot, is this odd sort of confusion, because early research on fats that showed fats to be provocative in terms of colon cancer and all that kind of stuff, or heart disease for that matter, they were lumping together all fats that became solid at
That's right.
room temperature. And so the trans fats obviously do that. So there was no control for whether the study was using trans fats or just normal natural saturated fats like butter.
That's right to a certain extent, but if you really go back and look at some of the early research that was done, the kinds of fats that were used for the studies that they did on animals were all partially hydrogenated vegetable fats. So they really basically were fats that were high in trans fatty acids. They called these fats saturated fats erroneously.
Yeah.
And so this is what sort of led to a lot of misinformation on the parts of not only the people who do the clinical treatment and recommendation, but also the people who were working, people who were doing the research, people who were picking up the boxes of partially hydrogenated vegetable fats. If you ask them how much of this is saturated and how much of this is not saturated, they would say, oh, well, it's all saturated. I've had many discussions with researchers and realized that they simply didn't know what they were working with. I mean, it always sort of blew my mind, because I couldn't quite imagine somebody who was actually trained and doing research not understanding. But many of these people were trained to do research in totally different areas, and they got involved in doing research for which there was money. And, of course, there was money for research that would come up with answers that supported the food industry. So we've got a lot of very peculiar information out in the so-called scientific literature, much of which can't really be read and evaluated properly by most of the people. When I give talks, and I give quite frequently, I will be asked to come to give a 1 or 2 hour lecture. I invariably end up with questions that tell me that the people just simply do not understand what a fat is, what an oil is. And one time when I gave a lecture at, as a matter of fact, Penn State, I started out showing a slide. And this particular slide was a slide that we had taken at the university. And it was a bottle of oil and a block of fat. And I asked people to sort of guess what was in the bottle of oil and what was in the block of fat. And invariably, the block of fat was identified as lard or palm oil or butter, although it was white, but, you know, even a few people said that. And the bottle of oil was identified as olive oil, almost invariably as olive oil. Well, it turned out that the bottle of oil, this, you know, bright yellow liquid oil, was palm oil. And the block of fat was soybean oil, partially hydrogenated soybean oil. And one of the professors at Penn State said to me after the lecture that that picture was something which was startling to him, that he hadn't realized what these fats and oils looked like.
Well, the other reason this is really important, I mean, part of what you're saying is that people in the field don't understand
fat. That's right. That's right.
Because there's been so much misinformation in the lack of control in the studies that were done on saturated fats. But the other issue is that the prevalence of hydrogenated vegetable oils, it's so prevalent because there was this discovery that polyunsaturated fats theoretically were not going to raise cholesterol levels, so this was going to be a panacea for protecting
right.
people, and so people were discouraged. And to this day, people still say to me, eat butter? They still think they're supposed to eat margarine because it's vegetable oil, and that's
right.
good, and the other is not. And the other thing that's really insidious is, of course, that people think buying things at the health food store, and they think they're doing themselves a favor. They say, well, yeah, they're eating cold cereal, but it's health food cold cereal, and they're eating these crackers, but they're health food crackers, and they don't realize that health food products, so-called health food products, still have hydrogenated fat in it.
That's right. That's right. So. One of the things I always try to do is to say to people, you must read the label. You must read the label, and you can assume that some of the time the label is going to give you the correct information. Now, there are times when crackers, especially crackers that came about 10 years ago from a health food store, a very large health food store, simply said soybean oil. But in fact, when we analyzed the crackers at the university, they were about a third to a little over a third trans fatty acids.
So frightening.
Yeah, because you expect when you pick up the box and you see on the label that it says soybean oil, that in fact it is just exactly that, and it has not been partially hydrogenated. But you can't really trust it. Now, once we have labeling, if the Food and Drug Administration can ever get off its
the thing you can't say on the air.
Right. Then we will actually have a situation where students at universities or people in different organizations will be able to take a product and they'll analyze it and they'll say, why is it that this label says that it's not partially hydrogenated, but in fact I see that it is. So there will be sort of like a watchful eye. And the industry, and believe me, the industry knows exactly how much trans fatty acids are in their products. And one of the reasons they know is because the companies that manufacture the shortening manufacture the shortenings in equipment that's almost invariably set to come up with the same product. There are some of the terms that they use are solid fat, the amount of solid fat in a product. And they make things so that it'll have a certain amount of solid fat because at certain temperatures, because that way they know, okay, this particular shortening is going to be good for this kind of a cookie or for this kind of a cake, or it's going to be good for frying so that it will go up to a certain temperature, and it will still give the same type of product.
So is that their motivation? I mean, my impression is that the motivation of the food industry was that 20 years ago, when arbitrarily McGovern's administration and a group of other consultants decided that the United States government should advocate the use of a high carbohydrate, low-fat diet, when this was recommended across the board without studies, and the food industry jumped on and started to produce a lot of high-carbohydrate foods that were supposed to be lower in fat. There was this sort of mobilization to create new fats that were supposed to be less dangerous. Is that what happened? Is that why they're
so... Well, actually, even a decade before that, what happened was that the person sort of responsible for some of this cholesterol myth. Ansel Keys from University of Minnesota reported in a couple of journals from some studies that the heart disease that we were seeing was caused by partially hydrogenated vegetable fats. Was caused by, I think he usually referred to it as hydrogenated vegetable fats. But that term meant, the two terms meant exactly the same thing. And the industry at that time said, oh, it's only the saturated fats that are in the hydrogenated fats, and we're going to change the way we make it, and we're going to have lots of polyunsaturates in, and we won't have so much saturates. Well, they didn't change anything because the shortenings that they were making that he had been looking at in his studies, those shortenings were about between 35 and 40% trans fatty acids, and certainly probably not much more than 15 or 20% saturated fatty acids, unless it was cottonseed oil, in which case it would have been a little bit more saturated fatty acids. And they sort of misled the people who were part of the industry, although they sort of were happy to be being misled, into thinking that, oh, well, it's only the saturates, and we're going to change the way we make these shortenings, and we're going to have lots of polyunsaturates, and it's not going to raise the cholesterol, and it's not going to cause heart disease. And basically, at that particular time, and you can go back in the literature, first of all, this is all documented by the food industry, by the edible oil industry. They left a very interesting paper trail of their skullduggery. And they also left lots of records of how they advertised the products, and gradually got sort of like half generation after half generation to believe that the types of fats, oils that people should be taking in were the quote-unquote polyunsaturates. And as a matter of fact, for a long time, they encouraged people to take in more polyunsaturates.
Right.
And this caused all sorts of problems.
Yeah, which we should get to in a second. I just want to ID the show. This
sure.
is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and I'm on the phone with Dr. Mary Enig, E-N-I-G, biochemist and lipid researcher. And we're talking about information about healthy fats and the inclusion of them in your diet, including saturated fats, which we're discussing the fact that they're not unhealthy. They are, in fact, healthy. Her book is called Know Your Fats, and it's available from Bethesda, spelled like the town, Bethesda Press, and their website is BethesdaPress.com. The thing that people to this day say, the thing that frightens them, and the thing that still pops, I mean, here the Chronicle did this spread, this extensive spread all over the paper, front page, food, the entire food section, talking about the use of cooking with tropical oils and saturated fats, and eating meat, and having all these things, these natural fats. There was a whole thing written about Asian cooking and about Thai cooking, and the reason that they're so healthy is because they use coconut oils and palm oils that are not damaged by heating, and that their ratio of the good fat, you know, the ratio of the threes to sixes, which we'll talk about in a second, is good, so there's no heart disease, et cetera, et cetera. So here they are on the one hand, and then if a few weeks later, a month later, there's an article saying, oh, Atkins diet is dangerous because you're eating too much meat and it's not good to eat the this and the that and on. And people just start to, their heads are blowing off. You know, they don't know what to believe because it's so contradictory. So one of the things that people are afraid of, mainly when they think of fat, is they're afraid of heart disease and they're afraid of cancer.
Right.
So why don't we take those one at a time and talk about, you know, how it is that that gets confused, particularly with heart disease, for instance. Part of what we've said is that there's been a misunderstanding about what kind of fat was used in the studies on both of these issues of heart disease and cancer. But in addition to that, what you're saying, what you told me yesterday, is that there's new research that was presented at the Heart Association meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you go over that? I actually did do a search and look for that. And
you
instead,
found the
I didn't find it. And what I found instead was I looked at everything that they had that was related on the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, where that was reported.
Mm-hmm.
I just did the spin. I looked at 108 articles, and out of them, almost every single, there were at least on each page. I mean, what have I got? I've got like 10 articles here in my lab.
Mm-hmm.
10 out of, so like a large percentage of them were about the same exact kind of study where they compared low-fat diets to higher-fat diets, or lean meat, you know, white meat to red meat, and saw no difference.
Right.
There was only one article out of all of them that I looked through that said lean beef was less provocative than beef eaten with the fat, and that article was looked to me like it wasn't very well designed.
Okay.
It was very small for one.
Well,
thing.
The particular articles that I was mentioning to you when we were talking yesterday came from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, one in 1998, one in 1999, and one in 2000. There are others also. But the one in 1998, the title is Change in Dietary Saturated Fat Intake is Correlated with Change in Mass of Large Low-Density Lipoprotein Particles in Men. And basically, the bottom line is that when you fed men a high-fat diet, which had more saturated fat, then they had the large, fluffy, non-problematic, low-density lipoprotein particles. And when you took them off the lowered the saturated fat, the LDL, the low-density lipoprotein particles became small and dense.
Right.
And the small, dense particles are the ones that are associated with heart disease.
Yes.
So that basically you could produce in these men a risk-type factor for heart disease.
Yeah, now this,
then you had the same thing in 1999. And then in the year 2000, they took children of parents that had a particular kind of low-density lipoprotein subclass pattern, and they put them onto the low-fat, low-saturated fat. And basically what it did is it caused them to change to the wrong kind of pattern. So that is probably something that only if you're really familiar with this whole heart disease, lipoprotein type of research will you pick up, because the abstract, while it's, you know, it's pretty clear, doesn't necessarily spell it out in such a way that people who are not familiar with what we're talking about with the LDL particles and things of that sort would understand. But basically, bottom line is everything that they've been telling people to do, which is lower your fat, lower your saturated fat, has been causing problems.
No, I mean, truthfully, I am sitting here right now, and my lap is completely covered with abstracts, which are saying exactly the same thing. Most of the studies were, there was a couple studies done in 1999, and then a whole slew of them in the 80s. Just
right.
One after another, the conclusions are the same. These findings, one of them says, these findings raise an interesting question. Are elevated serum cholesterol levels caused in part not by eating animal fat, but by some factor in grains, sucrose, or milk that interfere with cholesterol metabolism?
Mm-hmm.
Another one says, beef protein was not associated with hypercholesterolemia effect in healthy. Anyway, easy for me to say. The lack of influence of meat and its fat on affecting significant change in serum total cholesterol. No statistical differences. These are different studies I'm citing. No statistically significant changes were found in serum lipids in men, a very slight amount in women, or triglycerides when they ate meat versus fish. That was the other interesting thing, is there are all these studies that show that if you are afraid of red meat, which a lot of people come to me and they don't want to eat, I don't eat red meat. I eat chicken, I eat fish, I don't eat red meat. They even
right.
sometimes describe themselves as vegetarians, but they're eating fish and chicken, but it's meat that's demonized. And now we see, you know, this is a pile of studies sitting next to me, these abstracts that say they did studies, they gave people fish and white meat, chicken, and then they gave people red meat, and there was no difference.
That's right.
I mean, it
right.
was like a tenth of a percentage
right.
know, difference.
And as a matter of fact, they recommend, quote-unquote, Mediterranean diets, and talk out of one side of the mouth about, well, you shouldn't eat red meat, but then the Mediterranean diets are mostly lamb. And lamb is, quote-unquote, redder than beef.
Yeah, it is. It's higher in
saturated. I mean, it's just sort of inconsistencies. And the people who are doing the recommendations and the people who are sort of writing really, for the most part, don't realize that they're being contradictory. They
yes.
just simply don't realize. Even more than, let's say, the fact that we know that all of this anti-saturated is wrong. In other words, the criticism of the saturated fat as causing problems is really basically wrong. But there's something even more than that. As it turns out, saturated fatty acids are very, very important for health. And that is not realized, although it's very interesting. When I was at the American Heart Association meeting, after the talks, I spoke to one of the researchers from one of the Boston universities, somebody who's published, and as a matter of fact, if you go in and look at some of her publications, you'll see, oh, well, trans fatty acids cause this problem and that problem and that and this problem and that problem, and yet the saturates are, more so or as much, et cetera. And I said to her, do you know what lung surfactant is? And she sort of looked at me and she said, oh, yes, it's saturated. And I said to her, yes, it's saturated. In other words, all this important lung surfactant has a type of phospholipid that has two fatty acids attached to the phospholipid moiety, and those two fatty acids are saturated. And I said to her, yes, it's saturated. And she said, but the body can make saturated fats. And I said, of course the body can make saturated fats. The body makes saturated fatty acids preferentially because it needs them in many of these different tissues. I said, but you're up here telling people to lower the saturated fat intake, and you're also basically saying, and we've got to be careful not to take in too much of the carbohydrate from which the body makes saturated fatty acids. So when people eat, what they're eating is high omega-6, or more likely, the trans fatty acids. So I said to her, so the lungs want to have saturated fatty acids in their surfactant, but you're telling them to eat foods that are going to put either the polyunsaturated omega-6 into these lung surfactant molecules, or the trans fatty acids. So the polyunsaturated omega-6 will cause problems with free radicals, and the trans fatty acids also cause problems that we know about. So what do you want? Which one do you want? You want the free radicals? You want the trans fatty acids?
Yeah, do you want cancer
Right,
no, that's what you're saying.
And do you know what the response was? Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
Great.
Mind you, this is a very bright researcher.
Yeah, I understand.
A very nice person.
No, I understand. I understand.
But they don't think.
I know they don't. We need to take a brief musical break, and when we come back, I want to talk a bit about cancer, because you just mentioned, the problem with the omega-6s. So, you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and I'm with Dr. Mary Enig, E-N-I-G. Her book, Know Your Fats, is available through Bethesda Press, which is BETHESDAPRESS.com. Stay with us. We're going to be right back after this break.
I want the frim sauce with the arse and fade, with sharp offer on the side. Well, you know a girl, she really got to eat, and a girl, she should eat right. 5 will get you 10. I'm gonna feed myself right tonight. I don't want fish cakes and rye bread. You heard what I said, waiter, please. I want my fried, I want the frim sauce with the Austin Fay, with Chef Bumper all on the side. Shoot, do, 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 do.
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I'm on the phone with biochemist and lipid researcher Dr. Mary Enig, E-N-I-G, Ph.D., and her book, again, is Know Your Fats, and it's published by Bethesda Press. And just a reminder, if you miss parts of today's show or if it's informationally dense enough so that you'd like to listen to it again, you can go to either my website or call me and listen to the information on the voicemail of how to order cassettes of the show. We now also, in addition, are making available some CD sets of a block of shows. Like there's a hormone CD set, and there's a stress and illness CD set, and there are various other ones. You can look now, and there's a page for that. If you want to get a hold of Know Your Fats, go to the website Bethesda, BethesdaPress.com, BethesdaPress.com, and Know Your Fats, Mary Enig, E-N-I-G. We've been talking about the misinformation, even among researchers, about the composition of the tissues in our body and our membranes and how dependent they are on saturated fats. And this predominant recommendation of lowering saturated fats and increasing vegetable oils, which brings up this ratio, the issue of ratio in fats, of this the most damning thing that's been shown in certainly studies, big studies out of Japan, about why they started to get cancer in Japan more, wasn't because they included meat in their diet. It was because, I mean, they discovered it wasn't the meat. They discovered that they stopped using fish so much in their diet, right, and they started frying everything in
partially hydrogenated.
That and also omega-6 fats, like high, you know, like corn oil,
which
everybody thinks is Crisco, you know. I mean, not Crisco. I shouldn't name these things, I guess. Different cooking oils. I guess I can say Wesson oil, whatever. Things like this where they're loaded with... no fat is one kind of fat. All fats have a variety. Even meat has a mixture of saturated with monounsaturated and all these others. And people get very confused. But one thing that's very important to understand is that, as you've said many times, saturated fat is neutral. And then we have the omega-3s, which we know are health beneficial, very health beneficial. The fish oils and a few of the seed oils have the omega-3s. And then we have the omega-6s. And the omega-6s are ubiquitous in the diet because they're in grains and people add them to their foods. When this balance gets skewed and the omega-6s go up, and they're very delicate and they're easily damaged even in the body and turn into free radicals, the omega-3s have to be up too, and the antioxidants have to be up. Very delicate balance. And if that's out of balance, people end up with cancer often.
Right. Well, and the trans fatty acids play a major role in this, one of the major roles that they play is the fact that they change the membranes and they change the types of enzymes that the body normally would have to get rid of carcinogens or to keep the immune system functioning properly. And there have been studies just recently from Europe which started to look at the immune system and what happens with the immune system when you add the trans fatty acids to the diet. And there have been studies, most of them done in Europe, although just recently there was a study done in the United States that actually got published. There have been other studies that have been done, but they didn't get published, showing that the trans fatty acids increase the likelihood of certain kinds of cancers, breast cancer, colon cancer, and probably if you really could get funding for the people who have the kinds of systems to look at things like this, you would find that any kind of a cancer that is triggered by or dependent on the lipid bilayer, dependent on the membranes of the bodies or those kinds of fatty acids that are normally attached to the membranes and that kind of a balance, you would find that they are all related to the change in the way the body functions. So the trans fatty acids are not good from many, many different aspects, both for the potentiation heart disease and also for the potentiation of cancer.
Well, and the particular cancers that people associate with saturated fat, colon cancer and breast cancer. You know, I did something kind of funny. I told people they could get in touch with me to find out about how to get a copy of the show, and then I didn't give them any information. My website is yourownhealthandfitness.com, yourownhealthandfitness.com, or you can dial my information number 24 hours at 707-874-2772. If you don't have a computer and you need more information on how to order tapes or CD sets, you can send us a self-addressed stamp envelope. My P.O. box is on the information number, and just send it with enough stamps to cover sending something back. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of misinformation about what's causing cancer. And in Japan, as I said, that's where they saw the cancer coming in, was the lack of ratio.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the cooking fats and the breakdown products are a real problem. Now, let me throw one thing in here, because I have in the last number of months received an enormous number of emails asking a question of, does frying cause trans fatty acids to develop? And if so, why are we so concerned about the trans fatty acids in partially hydrogenated vegetable fats when you're going to make them by frying? Well, you don't. They cannot be made in normal cooking. They cannot be made in normal frying. You can heat corn oil or soybean oil or any of a number of oils for frying, and you may get breakdown products. You may get certain kinds of almost turpentine-type products being formed if you go to too high a temperature, but you will not form the trans fatty acids. And that particular piece of propaganda, misinformation that's out there is just simply wrong. And, of course, I think that it's probably because people don't understand. But whenever you put out wrong information about a product that's not good, and then somebody can prove to you that that's wrong information, then they sort of say, well, maybe the product's not that bad. The trans fatty acids are a problem. The trans fatty acids are bad because they change membrane properties. They get stored in the parts of the body that normally would have saturated fatty acids or maybe some of the monounsaturates, but they certainly wouldn't normally have the trans fatty acids, and they wouldn't be doing the things. But you don't want to accuse even a bad fat of doing something that it doesn't do.
Well, it is dangerous, however, to fry delicate polyunsaturated oils.
Yes, because they break down into free radical type products. They break down into all sorts of free radical breakdown products.
Yeah, which
rancidity type products.
Yes, and that contributes to the promotion of cancer as well.
That's right.
One thing I should mention here is, one thing we did say is that there are people who have different kinds of mutations, genetic mutations that run in families that mm-hmm. predispose them to heart disease and production of a variety of different clotting factors. And there are nutritional interventions to protect you from that. But some of those people can be sensitive to an overindulgence in like really hardcore saturated fat intake. But one of the things to remember is that when people do have sensitive reactions to saturated fats, most people that I see in my practice, if I give them a diet, if I change their diet and I encourage them to eat good healthy fats and lower their carbohydrate, you know, get rid of the starches and just vegetables and meat and stuff, they generally have a very noticeable lowering of their triglycerides and cholesterol. But occasionally
right.
someone won't. And in those instances, it's good to look at, you know, the general kind of pattern of what's going on. But the other thing that can really skew this is if somebody has some kind of inflammatory pattern.
Right.
If there's an unresolved infection, some people have a tooth that's going bad that they don't know about until it's been going on for a while. They go and they get their cholesterol tested and it's 300. And it's not because their cholesterol is really that high. It's because the inflammation will raise cholesterol.
That's right. And as a matter of fact, there were studies that were done. Ginsburg is the author, I think, at New York University, if I'm remembering correctly. And he measured the level of cholesterol in medical students during exams.
Sky high, huh?
It was sky high.
Yeah.
And when the exams were over with, they went back down.
Yeah.
But, of course, the normal cholesterol, normal natural cholesterol, ranges up to about 260.
Yeah, I think so, especially as you get older.
Right, and that is something that the heart, lung, and blood association knew.
Oh.
The NHLBI, they knew this. And when they had the cholesterol consensus conference, before the conference actually started, the whole thing had been written. And the three men that ran NHLBI were standing in the right-hand part of the Mazur Auditorium, just in front of those of us from the University of Maryland who were standing the equivalent of about 4 feet away from them. And one of them said to the another one, "We can't have the cutoff at 240. We have to have it at 200, or we won't have enough people to test."
Oh, jeez.
Now that decision was made by Kleeman, L'Enfant, and Rifkin.
Well, let's be clear about something. What you mean is that they wanted to have a large enough field of people to test.
And they couldn't get any more money to do studies.
But what I'm saying is they weren't saying that people above 240 were going to be dead. They were saying that it was harder to find people in higher ranges. Is that what you're saying?
No. Oh. They wanted to have people to be able to test, collect information, make recommendations. They had started the cholesterol.
They needed to think that their cholesterol was high.
They needed to think that their cholesterol was high, and they needed to have the insurance companies paying for the cholesterol thing. Now that has been not the information that those of us from Maryland heard as we were standing right there behind these three gentlemen, but that was all written about how the normal range was up to 260 in a science article written by Gary Taubes.
Yeah,
in
right.
March,
which is being criticized. That article's getting.
But he shouldn't have been criticized for that article because that article was right on target.
That's right.
Absolutely right on
target. No, I know. And actually, you know, somebody once asked me recently, "Are you an advocate of the Atkins diet?" And I said, "No, I'm an advocate of sort of pre-agricultural diet."
Right.
If you were going to put me in a camp, is vegetables, using vegetables for carbohydrates, eating meat, and doing the best you can with that. If people are really can't bear to eat animal protein and they tolerate beans, you know, just being very concerned with getting some eggs and dairy, you know, ethically raised stuff, non-toxic stuff into their diet to sort of finish their thing. But as much as possible, a pre-agricultural diet, a diet that's closer to our, what we've been doing for 5 million years since we started standing up and walking around hitting things, and each other. But there's another issue with cholesterol here, and it's very frightening. I mean, you're one of the only whistleblowers on this issue, you know.
Right.
I mean, Gary Taubes came in and he did this, and I got carried away here. Atkins does have the Gary Taubes articles on his website.
Right.
And you can go to the search engine and just type in Robert Atkins, A-T-K-I-N-S, I think it's atkinsclinic.com, I think is what it is, and look for the Taubes, T-A-U-B-S, articles.
Right.
What's happening now is that people are like Willett, who he quoted, are saying that he didn't quote him right, and there's this kind of everybody's very nervous about this.
You know why they're very nervous? They're very nervous because they've been running with the wrong information.
Yeah, face saving.
And they've been promoting the wrong information, and they're not quite sure how to back themselves out of the corner.
Yep.
This whole business of triangle, the pyramid, excuse me, I shouldn't call it a triangle. The pyramid was being done to promote the McGovern Committee dietary goals. And it's wrong. It's basically a...
It's good for making cattle really fat.
That's true. That's true.
And creating lots of omega-6 fats on
their
body.
Right, right. But it is also a diabetes-promoting...
Absolutely.
Diet, and it's unfortunate. But see, what happened with this whole cholesterol thing is they knew that you were not going to be able to get somebody whose normal cholesterol level is 230 to be able to get it lowered with diet. Wasn't going to work. And they already had the people from the pharmaceutical companies in
yes,
the wings. And
I knew it.
How do I know that? I know that because they accidentally invited me from the University of Maryland to a meeting. Okay? So basically what you have is you have a situation where all these poor people are being told that 220, 230, 240, whatever it is, cholesterol is too high. They can't get it down with diet, so they've got to take the statin drugs. Which don't work. This is the most
except that they make you
ludicrous,
sick. Yeah.
The most ludicrous situation. You talk about snake oil. You talk
well,
about
snake oil has omega-3 fat in it, actually. You can bear to eat it. Well, you know, let me just tell people you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness, and the rebel rouser that you're listening to is Dr. Mary Enig, E-N-I-G, our favorite lipid researcher and biochemist and whistleblower. Her book, Know Your Fats, is available at Bethesda, B-E-T-H-E-S-D-A Press, BethesdaPress.com, one word. I was going to say that there's an industry here. I mean, diabetes is a huge moneymaker,
yeah.
And so is cholesterol-lowering stuff.
Right.
And blood pressure-lowering stuff, none of which works. It's just unbelievable. In fact, there's an article, one of the abstracts I found shows that some of the antihypertensive drugs are raising people's lipids. They're raising
That's
their
right.
cholesterol levels.
That's right.
It's also important to mention here, now that people are having their hormones taken away, because that's what I'm going to talk about next week, is that you make your hormones out of cholesterol.
Right.
And when they go away, when your hormones get low in andropause and menopause, you're likely to see your cholesterol rise at that
That's
time.
Right. That's right.
Naturally. So here you are in hypertensive medicine, you know, anti cholesterol lowering medicine. So it's an industry, you know. It's a living. It's a way to make a living.
But unfortunately, it has misled.
Oh, people are so sick.
Yeah, they're terrified, absolutely terrified, and it is an absolutely, absolutely phony issue, for which there is a paper trail. In other words, it's, you know, don't necessarily believe me. I was there. I witnessed. I know what I'm talking about. But you don't even have to get this information from me, because the information is actually in the scientific literature, and you can see how it was then not followed through, because it was not going to promote the kind of industry, food or pharmaceutical, that the powers that be wanted promoted. So it's really very, very unfortunate. Of course, this also then ends up leading to people who become very, very determined to do absolutely the right thing, and they all want to know, what oil should I use?
Well, and I want to get to that in a second. I just want to mention to people that I think you can get in contact with the San Francisco Chronicle and order these articles.
Uh-huh.
It's Wednesday, March 12th, 2003.
Right.
So March 12th, 2003. The cover article is Good Fat, Butter 2 is Back. And then inside, it's the entire food section. The whole food section is devoted to it. It says fat is back, special section in the food. So it's section E. I'm sure people can get in contact with the Chronicle or go to their website and get it.
As a matter of fact, I think it's on the
website.
I think it's on their website, and you can probably, if you don't even have a computer, go through a library or something of that sort.
Yeah, sfgate.com, I think, is the Chronicle.
And the people at the Chronicle really understood that there isn't any one single fat that's the only fat, or one single oil that's the only oil, that there are many different oils and many different fats and mixtures. And as a matter of fact, if people eat normal foods, where they eat the normal amounts of meats in stews and leave the fat there, and it ends up being absorbed into the beans or into the vegetables or wherever it becomes attached, that they end up with a very nice amount of fat, and they get satiety, and they don't overeat.
That's for sure.
And if you go back and look at pictures of people in the 40s and the 30s and the 20s, people who were normally just sort of slender, and if you find the information about what kinds of foods these people ate, they were all basically relatively high in fat. It's just that they weren't hugely overloaded with calories or overloaded with excess carbohydrates. Now, there are people in some parts of the world that are stocky, and there's nothing that one can do because they're basically stocky people, and there are people who are thin. And that has nothing to do with the basic amounts of foods that they eat. It just has to do with their basic body composition.
Well, I will say one thing, which is something that I've observed, is some people misunderstand, for instance, Atkins' approach.
That's right.
And then what they do is they start eating a diet where there's no mixture of foods at all. They get very compulsive. They're people who are basically compulsive with food. So what
right.
they do is do something like have an entire quart of whole cream in a day, and then they eat nothing but organ meats or something, and it's just too much fat. I mean, you'd have to exercise like a man. I don't know how anyone gets this down, because that's very nauseating, honestly. Too much fat makes you kind of nauseous. So, you know, some people get as my grandparents used to say, mashugi with this stuff, and you don't have to do that. But as you say, mixing your fat, I mean, because and some fats are really better. Some people really do well with some sesame oil. But sesame oil is very soothing. Ayurvedic medicine uses it. And then this young woman who wrote the article about the Thai cooking, where they use the tropical fats. We now have a new product available. You can get palm oil, which is a mixture of monounsaturated and saturated fat, which is great for cooking in a hot pan. If you want to stir fry, you know, that's what you use. And now Spectrum Oils is making an organic, they call it organic shortening. Mm-hmm. And it's actually just palm oil, and it's very inexpensive. And it can be used for stir frying, where you don't want to over fry, you don't want to heat your oil, you don't want to take sesame oil and cook it that hot, you know.
Yeah. Some of the bakery products that the Newman group, the Newman Organic, are making, they're using palm oil, organic palm oil.
And then you might want to say something about lauric acid before we quit, about the benefits of the tropical fats because of that.
Yeah, well, the lauric acid in coconut oil and in palm kernel oil, not palm oil, but palm kernel oil, have a benefit of providing to the individual who's consuming them something that the body uses to kill bad viruses, kill bad bacteria,
and fungus,
and bad protozoa.
Yeah, and also fungus, no?
And
like
also fungus,
candida
right.
and stuff.
Right. And, of course, those types of oils are found in parts of the world where fungus and things of that sort are seen a little bit more. Parasites are seen more. And they've used they take big hunks of the coconut and feed it to animals who've got parasite infections, and it clears it up. And the reason it does is because the lauric acid is used by the body to make an antimicrobial. And so it's a case of there are all sorts of useful things that are out there in the natural fats that you certainly don't see in the processed hydrogenated vegetable fats. So basically, people should be eating a mixture of natural fats.
But, I mean, a good rule of thumb, if you don't want to skew your ratio between your threes and sixes, say you're taking you're taking flaxseed oil, which you're keeping cold and in the fridge and dark and replacing every month because it's so volatile, and you're taking vitamin E to protect that fat when you eat it, or you're taking the omega-3 fish oils, the body oils, and then you want to make sure you're not eating so many of the sixes that you're getting too much. So your neutral oils are going to be your butter and olive oil, and then some of these saturated fats like the palm oil, the palm kernel oil, and the coconut oil.
Right.
And then you've got other oils which are just very healthy that have more sixes, like the sesame oil and some of these other oils. We were talking briefly about cocoa butter, which is mostly used for cosmetics. Is there any reason to use cocoa butter in anything in cooking?
Cocoa butter belongs in chocolate.
Yeah, I know. That's why I was thinking of using it for cooking. I was thinking, can I impart that flavor? You know, like make a mole or something.
I think it's probably too expensive.
True.
To use as a cooking fat.
Yeah.
But it has particular melting properties that make the chocolate melt in your mouth appropriately.
You would say that.
And and what it amounts to is if the chocolate doesn't have real cocoa butter in it, then it has what's called cocoa butter substitutes.
Oh dear.
And cocoa butter substitutes may not be a problem. They may not be bad, but they are not cocoa butter.
Yeah, I'll say.
So that it depends on, you know, how much of a gourmet you are with respect to your tasting ability for chocolate.
Yeah. You know, we have to, on that note, on the chocolate note, which is a whole other subject because chocolate is a bad industry, but I suppose there's free trade chocolate. I think you could make your own, add stevia to it, so you're not eating sugar. We have to get out of here so we can let the next show start. I want to thank you so much, Mary. It's always such an honor to have you on the show. You're such
a
wealth of information. Mary Enig, E-N-I-G. Her book, Know Your Fats, is available at Bethesda, B-E-T-H-E-S-D-A Press, P-R-E-S-S.com. Keep that work going. I mean, just keep causing trouble. Thank you so much.
I shall.
Thanks.
Okay.
Bye. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. If you need more information or if you want a cassette copy of this show or any other in the series, Your Own Health and Fitness, you can call my information number at 707-874-2772. 874-2772. For a list of other available shows, you can go to the website, yourownhealthandfitness.com. And on the website now, there is some information about CD sets of between 4 and 6 shows in a set that are on a certain topic so that you can buy them that way on CD. So you can look on the website for that, or you can send us a self-addressed stamped envelope for information on CD sets to the P.O. box on the phone number. Next week, I'll be going over the use of bioidentical sex hormones for all of you who are afraid to use hormones. The engineer for Your Own Health and Fitness in Sebastopol is George Curtis at the Powerhouse Brewery. Thank you to Johnny Otis in the Powerhouse. And at KPFA, I think I have Lisa Ballard today. I'm Lena Berman. Your Own Health and Fitness is sponsored by Free Speech Radio. May it live forever. KPFA 94.1 FM, Berkeley, California. And I'll see you next week.